If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes, the winning podcast of all the Inside the Ropes podcasts, and it is all because of the man who I'm on the phone with right now, Finn Martin. Finn, how are you, sir, royalty, king of the Power Slam? How are you today?
I'm very well, Kenny. Let's not gloat. No, let's not gloat about this historic victory. No, I'm doing great. How's yourself, Kenny?
I'm good. I've got a bit of a sore throat, so I've got some Strepsil lozenges here to try and get that to go down. I also made the mistake of watching, before we recorded this, it popped up in my Twitter feed, the trailer for the live-action movie of Cats, the music, the Broadway show. It looks terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. It is. It's like, I could never go and see it. I'd have nightmares for about 5 weeks. It just looked terrible. So, but apart from that, I'm fine.
I thought you were going to... Someone put on the Inside the Ropes feed the trailer for the latest Cena movie. I thought you were going to mention that.
I saw that trailer and I'm going, I mean... Because, you know, like, so if you look at Batista, right, and what he did, which, by the way, if anybody's not checked out the Batista 24 special on the network, it's tremendous, one of the best ones they've done. But, like... When Batista went and did, you know, he got the Guardians of the Galaxy thing, and then he kind of, you know, he got all these kind of roles in succession. Like, he got the role in the Bond movie, Spectre. He got a lot of good roles. And I know Cena's had a couple. You know, he was in that Daddy's Home movie or whatever, and I know he's going to be in a Fast and the Furious, but, like,
Don't forget Blockers.
Blockers, the... Jesus Christ. And then you watch this, and it's like, Cena just, like, he is so not... my kind of comedy. Like, he's like, you know, like when you watch like an American late night chat show, like, yeah. And they do these like bits and have these like things, like, oh, it's the funniest thing ever, and I'm just like, I hate it. And he is just, and look, I'm sure that a lot of people will, as Jim Cornette would say, for the people who like that kind of shit, that's the kind of shit those people are gonna like. I just don't think I'll be going to see it at the cinema. Actually, somebody, you've brought this up now, so I'm going to name and shame this guy. 100%. Okay, yeah. Kyle Sardines, right? He must... Anyway, Kyle Sardines. I'm going to make fun of his last name, but that's... Anyway, he said, just saw a rumour about John Cena teasing a return. Would anyone else love to see him have a full feud with someone? I'd be into a Cena versus heel anti-consumerism Daniel Bryan feud. Maybe even a SummerSlam match. And I wrote back, I've loved some of Cena's stuff, but I'm good on part-time, happy to be back Cena. If he has a program he wants to do and be serious, I'm in. I doubt he is, though. And Kyle responded with, are you scared that Brian would have to sell that lightning fist? And I said, yes, I am. As long as he has that fucking shitty, I think I'm an Avenger, but I'm not finish. Stay away. We do not want you here. You know? It's like when The Rock came back in 2011, everybody wanted The Rock to come back. You know, people had been clamoring... Who's clamoring for Cena to come back, apart from Callum Hogan and Kyle Sardines?
Kenny, my bile towards Cena, it's contaminated you.
I think it has, you know. Well, no, in my head I'm going, do you know what? Like, just let's, like, Cena had a really good career, and he didn't do a lot of kind of, like, he didn't stick around long past his due by date, right? He still even had the AJ feud a couple of years ago, you know, and then he did the thing with The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which was what it was. Just leave it there. Like, if he's going to come back, and because he did that stupid match at, like, the Greatest Royal Rumble. Was it the Greatest Royal Rumble or Crown Jewel? Greatest Royal Rumble, I think it was. And then he spoke
that's
to the...
right, the first one. Was it the first one? And then he obviously did the match as well in Australia, didn't he?
That's right, yeah. Where he used the punch of air to bury Elias or Lashley. I can't remember which one it was. Probably both. I think... so... Like, but like, I'm not, this is not me being like, I hate John Cena. It's just like, he's not in the last 2 years shown that he has any desire to do this anymore. So why bring the guy back if he doesn't want to do it?
You know, yeah, exactly.
We've got a clip on the YouTube channel of Edge from backstage in Manchester, and I asked him about part-timers being involved in wrestling. He said he always felt it was, he didn't have a problem with it. He was like, I'm going to use whatever eyeballs they can get on to hopefully get them to watch me, and I'll try and maximize my minutes in that way, right? And he said, you know, when The Rock came back, The Rock was the highest paid movie star in the world, so he didn't have to come back. He came back because he wanted to come back to wrestling. Sadly, you know, they had him beat John Cena first, and then by the time Cena was going to get his rub, people were like, didn't want it. So, but just with Cena, there's no match that I think people are clamoring to see. He doesn't seem that interested. He's now got a finish, which is an absolute mockery. I don't want Hogan back either.
No.
I don't want to see Hogan have a match, because it wouldn't be... If you have a favourite wrestler, to me, you should want your favourite wrestler to come back if there's a way they can come back and look good and be true to what you liked about them. And if they can't do that, they should stay away, if you ask me.
Yeah, let's wish John Cena the very best in his movie career. And then won't have reason to come back.
Maybe if you make a conscious decision to buy a ticket and go and see each of his films, that will keep him away.
Well, yeah, that would be a shrewd investment.
You know what we should do at the end of the year? We should do a poll with all of our listeners of all the John Cena movies, and whichever one wins, we have to watch and review.
We should do that. Let's do that.
We'll do that at the end of the year. So any movie of John Cena's, from The Marine back in 2004 to whatever this new one's called, we will put it up in a poll, and it is up to you guys. And if you don't make it a really bad one, I'll be very disappointed. Anyway, I thought we'd kick off this week by just mentioning a kind of sad note. Colt Cabana announced yesterday on his Art of Wrestling podcast that he will be stopping the podcast. He's going to be stopping doing it. He's doing shows in August for the Edinburgh Fringe, and then he's got a couple of contractual ones he has to do through the rest of the year. But then that's going to be it for the end of the year. Are you surprised, Finn, to hear him have it come to an end? Because, I mean, when you think about it, Colt Cabana, a lot of people have been saying it, we wouldn't be doing this, and I don't think most of us would be podcasting if it wasn't for Colt Cabana, you know, being the originator back in 2010.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did an interview with him in 2016, it was. We talked a lot about the podcast there, and he was a trailblazer. He was the guy who really popularized the long form interview podcast. I mean, when he started, how many wrestling podcasts were there? I don't know how many, but not many. And his was obviously the biggest for quite a long time. And inevitably, when something's popular, the imitators move in. And lots of people are doing podcasts that the hosts were more famous than him, i.e. Steve Austin or Chris Jericho or Jim Ross. And they had access to bigger stars than Colt Cabana had access to. So they were going to basically draw more listeners. So I think he was really in a position where he kind of saw the writing on the wall, and he'd done pretty much everything he could with his podcast. And it wasn't the force that it had been, for all the reasons that I've just explained.
He also changed the format to be in like an audio documentary series. Where he thought, so the last kind of year or so, last kind of year and a half, it has been like his travels. And, you know, like an episode would have 4 or 5 interviews with different people for 5-10 minutes. So it had become a different thing than it had been before. And obviously, I'm sure the punk thing didn't help.
No. I mean, he can't have done. I mean, it's kind of amazing that he ever returned to it after that. You know, obviously the... Was it November 15, wasn't it, was it November 15?
November 2014. Yeah.
14, that's right. So it was November 14 when he did, it was two podcasts, wasn't it? It was a two-parter.
Yeah, there was one, and then there was one about, there was one, and then the next week it was like fan questions in response to the first one.
That's right, and obviously we know what happened with the WWE and... the Doctor and everything, and that's still ongoing now with between Cabana and Punk. I mean, it's kind of the nightmare that doesn't seem to have an end for them. So it is amazing that he ever went back to it. I mean, that's got to have tarnished it for him as well. But I just think, you know, he needs to be recognised for what he did for the format. I mean, you know, a real pioneer of podcasts. And as you say, would we be doing the podcast now had it not been for Cabana? Well, possibly, because I think someone else would have done it, because it was just going to be podcast was going to be, because there's podcasts on everything. So, I mean, wrestling was going to get in on the act. So it probably would have happened anyway. But I mean, you know, you've got to say that Cabana was a guy who really did make a difference and really made podcasts into something. I think he set the standard because it's something that he did. There was a real quality to it as well. I think when he was doing those interviews and he got so many big names who would talk in such depth about so many different topics, that it was, even if it was somebody that you weren't that interested in, because it was Cabana's Art Wrestling podcast, you'd give it a listen because he'd set a standard, hadn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know some were better than others, of course. But I mean, he was somebody that really, I think, set out to put out a high quality product and succeeded most of the time.
But, you know, it's, there's a relatability that I have to this that I don't think I would have had before, because for years when I was doing live shows, the goal was to get somebody big, right? Like a big, big, big name that had never done anything like it before. So I got The Undertaker, you know? And then all of a sudden, with circumstances, you know, we have a signed contract, we're good to go. I've done all my due diligence that I've done for years. And all of a sudden, something comes up that I can't control. If I try and fight it, he won't be able to come whatsoever. And then you let everybody down. So you try and do the best that you can. And it goes from this venture where you've built up 5-6 years of putting everything into it, and you're finally going to get to see a big return on that. You're finally going to get something that's, you know, sustainable for your future, be able to put a deposit down the house and all this kind of stuff, and then it's all ripped away from you. And then all you get is a shovel of shit from every direction at all times. And yeah. I got out of that lucky compared to what Cabana got out of the situation, you know, because for me, I was able to find a way to him to still be there, bring in Mick Foley. Like, I was able to kind of weather the storm of what that was. And did I come out of it unscathed? Probably not. You know, somebody asked me last week, they said, you know, what's your fondest memory from the Undertaker tour? I said, I don't have any. It was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. I mean, I enjoyed doing the shows with Mick Foley. I enjoyed that. I didn't enjoy anything else about it. It was excruciating to go through. It affected my mental health. It was horrible, right? But at the end of the day, I was able to kind of leave that. And then within 2-3 weeks, we were back to podcasting. I was already moving on to other stuff. And it was all fine. Whereas for Cabana, he had built this podcast up and up and up. And then he finally got, you know, this big scoop of him and his best friend talking about wrestling. And that interview not only, you know, cost him a lot of money because somebody decided to be very petty to go after him and the other guy for it, but then he also ended up losing his friendship and he owes a lot of money, so he didn't come out of it anywhere. I came out of it a lot better than with my incident than he did with his.
Yes.
And he still kept his going for years, and I say that because it takes balls to keep it going like he did. I don't think I would have been able to keep it going if I were in his scenario, so I think he deserves a lot of credit for trying to kind of stay classy and stay true to what he'd done and that podcast. And yeah, I really just wish nothing but the best for him.
Yeah, hear, hear. I mean, you know, I've interviewed him a few times, met him last year at the Wrestling Con event, and he was such a nice guy. You know, hear, hear, Kenny. I mean, I wish him all the best. You know, I mean, huge props to him for his perseverance and struggling, you know, staggering against the pain, as they say. You know, I mean, it's... you know, it's, yeah. I mean, I obviously, when I was running Power Slam, there was a lot of difficulties there, but nothing like what Cabana has encountered and is continuing to having to endure now. I mean, yeah, real, it's, what can you say?
I mean, yes, it's good. You know, even, really, I mean, this is not a cheap plug, but, you know, if you do read Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam years, you will see some of the stuff that Finn went through. And I've obviously explained the big thing that I went through, but, you know, I think for us, you know, we're not sitting having to figure out how to pay high five figures for something, you know?
Absolutely.
I should also mention, just very quickly, that I saw the news the other day that FSM is closing its doors, the magazine as well. And it's funny because obviously, Finn, when I finished reading Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam years about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, you know, you saw the writing on the wall for print media years ago. You saw where it was all going. And, you know, other people have tried to keep it going. You know, I've got to say, for me personally, as somebody who bought wrestling magazines, I bought Power Slam up until the end. I'm not just saying that because you're on the phone, but I did. But I can't say I've bought an issue of FSM in about 3 years, three or four years. And I think a lot of that's because by the time, like you say, with wrestling podcasts coming around and all this different sort of stuff, there's just such a kind of need for instant content that doing a print publication is it's just not probably not going to work anymore. I mean, we've still got Wrestle Talk magazine, which is kind of the one that's probably got the best chance going forward because it's got you, it's got a lot of people behind it that know what they're doing. So, yeah. But yeah, I just wanted to throw out a quick, sad to hear about FSM, and you know, hopefully the people who have been involved go on to find something else to do in wrestling where they can still create and all that sort of jazz. So, just give them a
definitely, quick. Absolutely. I mean, I'm hoping I know one of them has found another. I can't really say too much about that. In fact, I can't say anything about it.
So, move on, Finn.
No, I can't. So, but I mean, yeah, it was obviously it was 5 years ago this week since the final issue of Power Slam went out. It was July 17th, 2014. So, yeah, I mean, it is a real shame, you know, even though when I closed Power Slam, it was of my own volition. It was of my own doing. It was planned. It was something that I knew needed to happen. It was still, there's still a void there in your life because you become very attached to a magazine. So I feel for those guys who are involved in FSM, they kept going for 5 years longer than me. So good for them. It's just whenever I talk to anyone who either was in the magazine business or still is, we just try not to really discuss things like magazine sales and the future and things like that, because it's just demoralizing. It's just something you don't really want to talk about because you know the future. As far as Wrestle Talk magazine goes, obviously that's available by a subscription. That's a different business model to what Power Slam was. And that's been around for nearly 2 years now and is continuing. And I'm really pleased to be involved in that and hope people will support Wrestle Talk magazine. But the reason that has succeeded in the way that Power Slam really couldn't continue to succeed was because the business model is very different. So
also you were sort of the one man job, right? You were you owned the empire kind of thing and did it, whereas now you get to be part of another thing and get to do what you do, but you don't have the pressure of having to do every single bit of it at all times.
Well, there was other people that contributed to Power Slam. It wasn't just me, but I mean, I obviously was a lot of hours, and people know I did the design, the setting as well, did lots of things for it. So, I mean, it was absolutely a full-time job plus. but you're right, with WrestleTalk magazine, I contribute a couple of articles per issue. I really take my time with them, which was one of my regrets with Power Slam, because everything was such a rush. There was times things went out that I would have liked a few more hours on. When it comes to my articles on WrestleTalk magazine, I take my time with them. When I send them, I'm absolutely 100% delighted with them. Same with the stuff on my website. I actually put a wrestling story up there last week that I hope people would check out. Spent a long time writing that. And also with my stuff for Inside the Ropes as well. You know, everything I write for you is something that I take my time with, rewrite. And if you want to be a good writer, you've got to keep rewriting. Just keep rewriting and eventually you'll get there. But with Power Slam, because the pressure was on each month, sometimes, you know, you would have liked an extra half hour, an hour on a piece, but you just didn't have the time. So you had to send it and get on with the next article. Because I do less writing now, I feel that my writing is better than it was. And I'm really happy with that arrangement, and long may that continue.
Well, just since you brought it up, because I didn't expect us to talk about it, you mentioned that 5 years ago this week, Power Slam closed its doors. Do you remember the day that the issue came out? Did you do anything to commemorate it? Did you have any sort of regrets on the day it went out, or were you kind of like able to go, this was the right time, this was the right decision?
Probably the big day was, it used to go on sale on the Thursday, as you know. I would finish the magazine on the Friday. This is how tight I had it down. I would finish the news section on the Friday, and then the magazine would be on sale in most parts of the UK the following Thursday. That's how tight it was. And that was why things were so up to date, which was very important. So the big day really was the Sunday. because that was when I had to ring everybody up who worked on the magazine and give them the bad news, because I knew that the very next day the digital version would be available. That was always available on the Monday. The print was available on the Thursday, and subscribers would generally get it Wednesday, Thursday. So I hadn't told anyone on the magazine that I was closing the title. And I did feel there was some guilt about that, but I didn't really want the word to get out about it. I wanted to keep it quiet. And everybody was getting paid, so it wasn't like I was just folding it and doing a runner. Everyone was getting paid. Everybody who worked on the magazine was paid in full. So, you know, there was some guilt about the fact that I didn't tell them in advance. But at the same time, I felt that was the right thing to do. It wasn't like I was going to change my mind. You know, this needed to happen. This was the direction of travel. So the Sunday, I went into work, and I think I was probably on the phone for, I don't know how long it was. It was at least 11 hours, might have been more than that. If I've said a number before and the number's different now, I apologize. But I was on the phone like all day and well into the night, just ringing everyone. I think it was maybe two people I didn't get through to. So that was a significant day because I had to go through it with everyone. And I'd be on the phone for 45 minutes with each person, because most of these people who worked on the magazine I'd known for a long time. Many are considered friends. Quite a few I'm still in touch with today. And hopefully I'll be in touch with them as long as I live. So, I mean, that was a big day. Obviously, the Monday was when the digital version was available, and then people found out by then. And then it came out on the Thursday, and, you know, a lot of people got in touch, and there's a lot of emails, and I put them on the website. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, understood why I was doing it. I think most people got it, and most of the people who worked on the magazine, there was only one who really had a go at me. Everyone else knew that they knew that this was where it was going. They knew that it wasn't going to be able to continue much longer just due to the changes in the way that people consume media. So people knew that. So I think they all took it pretty well in hindsight. And I think most of the readership did as well. I mean, I know people still to this day, people say, oh, you know, you should relaunch Power Slam, you know, Mr. Magazine and everything. And I think, you know, that really means a lot to me, because what it denotes to me is that the magazine retained its quality to the end, which was something that, you know, I really strived to achieve, was to make sure there wasn't a decline in quality. And when your sales are going down, which they were really since September, October of 08 was when we started to see the decline, which coincided with the economic crisis, the worldwide economic crisis. When your sales are going down, you know, your immediate reaction, especially for me, because people know what I'm like, is to really sort of examine yourself and say, is it you? Have you lost it? Is the magazine not as good as it used to be? Is that the reason why fewer people are buying it? And obviously, you know, and that is a great fear when you're doing anything, like a magazine or a podcast or anything. You know, you want to try and maintain that quality. And the fact that, you know, people were sending those messages in, I don't know whether it retained its quality to its end, to the end. I hope it did do. And I hope the reason people stopped buying it was for other reasons. Maybe they lost interest in wrestling, or just consumed the wrestling media another way, or just felt that magazines were surplus to requirements. I don't know, I'm sure lots of people had different reasons for discontinuing their support for Power Slam. But it's like anything, Kenny, isn't it? If your numbers are going down, there's got to be some introspection. There's got to be, well, you know, what do we do to correct this? And in the end, I kind of realized that there wasn't anything I could do. And that was the reason why I made the decision to close the title when I did, rather than you know, running it into the ground or having to slash costs, which is what I would have had to have done to keep the thing going. And then I would have had to do frequent price increases. And there was all these things I would have would have been necessitated by declining sales in order to keep the business afloat. And I really thought to myself, I would rather that Power Slam closed July of 2014, 20 years to the month when it launched, when the magazine was still a quality publication, was still, you know, using a lot of photos, was still printing on quality paper, was still using a top of the line printer, was still paying all the contributors well, which, you know, was something I was most proud of, was that I really did pay people well on that magazine. And to make sure as well that everyone got paid when the magazine closed. So there's lots of different factors as to why I made that decision. Also, I wanted to do the books. I wanted to do different things. That was something that I'd always really yearned to do, was to write about wrestling in a different format. You know, obviously, I'm glad that I'm still writing about wrestling now, you know, for WrestleTalk magazine, for Inside the Ropes. You know, I'm not going to talk about another wrestling book at this point, because who knows if that will ever happen. Well, I'm hoping it's going to happen, but I don't know when it's going to happen. So, you know, I'm still writing about wrestling, but I just realized that it was, I couldn't do it in Power Slam any longer. And it was to go out on your own terms than to really, you know, to really sort of lose control and that decision being forced upon you, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's an irony that, you know, in 2014, that was when Cabana did the podcast that everybody's talking about. You closed Power Slam. Now here we are 5 years later, and CM Punk, this is a segue, CM Punk has now been announced for StarCast 3 in Chicago. And not only has he been announced for a meet and greet, but he's going to do a one-on-one interview on stage, which will be broadcast on Fight TV. They did a very cool kind of promo video, which had the lyrics of the beginning of Cult of Personality. He was kind of having some fun with it on social media as well. I mean, what do you make of this? Because he's been very adamant to not be associated with stuff. You know, he did do a sign at Pro Wrestling Tees during the All In Week, but it wasn't part of StarCast. It was, and you know, he has T-shirts with Pro Wrestling Tees, so it makes sense. But him being part of StarCast and especially doing an on-stage interview, I never thought he'd do anything like that again after the podcast, but he clearly is. What do you make of the story? Is it a big story? Is it not a story? And were you shocked to hear it when the news broke last night?
Well, I mean, it is a big story. Of course it's a big story. So this is going out live, yeah?
Yes.
Who is it going to be? Conrad, who's going to be doing the interview?
Well, obviously, they did approach me. But unfortunately, we couldn't quite come to financial terms. I don't know why you find that so funny, Finn. No, I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know. I mean, there's part of me that would love... it's not going to happen. But there's part of me that would love if somehow it was Cabana. And they had sorted their stuff out. That would make me really happy. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, is it JR? Is it Conrad? Does he have someone else in mind? I don't know. But I mean, that to me, that is the event of the weekend. CM Punk talking.
It is, and we know that nobody can pull CM Punk from that event, right? No company.
But there was a great tweet. There's a great tweet from Sean Radkin at PW Torch, and he just wrote, "WWE have pulled CM Punk from StarCast," because that's just what it is, isn't it?
Of course it's a big story. And if he's going to be doing this live, there's no way they're going to go anywhere near that stuff that they shouldn't have really talked about back in 14. There's no way they're going to go anywhere near that. It's going to be a bit of a tricky one, really, because, I mean, his fight career was such a colossal dud. I mean, they're going to talk about that? It just really was.
Because, I don't know if you know, I'm not clear. Legally, he is allowed to say anything he wants about when he worked there, as long as he is not... Because the problem with the podcast before was that he was seen to be... Or they were insinuating that he was accusing a doctor of malpractice or neglect or something like that. But I'm sure in terms of like anything else in his career, he can say whatever he wants, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go into... I've just remembered what it was that he was accused of, and that was the reason why the litigation took place, but let's not talk about that. So you're right, yeah, he can talk about WWE. Yeah, he can say whatever he wants about them. There's going to be tremendous interest in it. People are going to... The interviewer will have to ask the question... He'll have to, or she will have to. Would you? What would tempt you back? I mean, he said that he's never going to wrestle again. He did that interview. Was it with the Ariel Helwani? How would you pronounce his surname? Ariel
Helwani.
That's it.
Yeah.
Because he ended up doing an interview with him last year and kind of hinted that he might wrestle again, and then did another interview a few days later and shot it down entirely, didn't he? I remember writing about this at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of odd because he was the one who had actually floated the notion that he may be tempted to wrestle again. And then people, oh, when are you coming back? And people must have just been bombarding him with messages. And then a few days later, he's shot. No, oh, I'm never wrestling again. You know, will you people leave me alone type thing? But that question will have to be asked. And the fact that he's participating in a fan event like this will be seen as evidence by some that he's working towards that outcome, that he may put the boots back on, he may put the tights back on again, wrestle again.
Do you think that for wrestling fans who are listening to this, who are Punk fans, is him doing StarCast and him doing an interview and stuff, is that enough to kind of look into it and say, maybe he is going to appear at All Out? I mean, because to me, in some ways, if he doesn't appear at All Out, I mean, now people are going to be expecting it. People are going to be... So to me, you're almost kind of saying, okay, now you can go on the ride and enjoy this. Rather than like... Because if he doesn't, I just feel... I can't imagine that Cody and the Bucks and all these guys who are very smart about... You know, because they're not going to have got to this stage if they're not smart. They're not going to basically be like, CM Punk's around, he's doing StarCast, and then he just doesn't appear.
I mean, that's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, my way of looking at it is that Punk has to know that this is how people will read this situation, that this is a precursor to him doing something in an arena, whether it's making an appearance on a wrestling show, I mean, whether it's making an appearance, cutting a promo, or doing something physical. So he has to know that this is just going to whip it all up again, isn't it? You know,
definitely.
You know, that fire, you know, by the way, the John Cena film is called Playing with Fire. You know, he could have hired John Cena to put that fire out, but he's just restarted it now, hasn't he?
I don't feel like Punk, I mean, I know Punk gets a lot of crap and stuff from people, but like, I just don't think Punk is going to do something specifically to kind of fuck with fans, you know? Like, I feel like he's not going to... To me, this says to me he's making an appearance All Out. And the other thing that's funny is that, you know, this is a guy who was in WWE before, and if he wants to, he's going to be able to come out to his name, to the theme music we all know. You know, nothing's having to be changed here.
No.
You're getting the full experience. And I do find it funny for the people who don't like Punk and stuff, you know. He's not done anything wrestling since 2014. And when he gets announced for this, it all of a sudden is the biggest appearance of the year.
Well, exactly. I mean, that just shows you that there is huge interest in him still. But no, he has to know, he's got to know that by participating in this, people are going to expect him to do more. He's got to know that. And which kind of makes you think maybe there will be more, because if he... You know, it's just going to stir everything up again. All those questions, you'll be getting bombarded with these questions as we speak, Kenny. People were, when are you going to wrestle? Who are you going to face it All Out? You know, it's going to be getting those questions. It's going to be pouring in, because he's basically set the table for a comeback, hasn't it? Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to make a comeback, but it's certainly hinting that he might do something more. And that's going to come up, of course. That's going to be the question, isn't it, in the interview? It's going to be the question.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, like you say, is there going to be any trepidation? You know, I assume that he's going to speak to his lawyers beforehand, because they look, you know, is there anything here I should be staying away from?
Yes, quite a few things.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I think some of us just want to see CM Punk just really have some digs at the people who took him to court, you know, because what's funny is like he could have saved so much money and settled with WWE in that court case, and he just did not want to do it. I think in the end he won, but to him that the principle was more important than the money.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't think he wants. I mean, look, he tried UFC. It takes a lot of balls to try a new career like that. It didn't quite work out the way he thought it was gonna. So to me, I mean, I think it's inevitable now, especially after this, Because I remember saying somebody the other week, I said, you know, I think if he doesn't do anything on this weekend, all out in Chicago, then he's not doing anything. Because this just feels like if you're writing a book, this is where he shows up.
Well, maybe and maybe not, Kenny. I mean, we've got a TV show starting October, so maybe it could happen at a later date. You know, it doesn't have to happen in Chicago All Out. It doesn't have to. It could happen at a later date for sure.
I just, for me, I just think the likelihood is that, you know, he lives in Chicago. That's where it is. Because I don't think they have a show after Chicago until the October 4th show.
Okay.
So, you know, if he turns up at the end of that show, you know, kind of like a Moxley thing, I mean, that's a huge boost for your October 4th show, right? Or your October 2nd.
To me, if you're going to use him as a performer, don't use him in Chicago. Use him on TV. And this could be seen as like Lex Luger on Nitro.
True.
So that's the time to do it. Is you have CM Punk make his first appearance on your first TV show at the end to beat someone down or challenge somebody. And that there is your hook. That's your hook for episode 2. So theoretically, more people will watch episode 2 than episode 1 because the word will get around. It's like, CM Punk's back. That's the time to do it, Kenny. Not on this show that's already sold out. Do it on your TV show. Because, and also, you know, that's a statement to the television audience. This is who we are. This is who we've got. You know, tune in next week.
Well, I guess we'll see what they're going to do. But it's a big story that he's going to be at StarCast. I think that most people will be checking out. I mean, I can't imagine anybody who's not going to check out his interview. You know, it just feels like it's the biggest interview of the year. So.
Absolutely. For me, CM Punk was kind of like buried away in that compartment alongside the Roman Reigns heel turn, you know, never to be discussed again, the CM Punk comeback.
Mm-hmm. Unless there's new information, which now there is.
Well, that's absolutely right, yeah. I mean, I personally would like him to make a comeback, not for my benefit, but for his. For him to come back, do some matches, and to leave pro wrestling either next year or whenever, you know, on his terms, having done creatively what he would find stimulating, one that participated in the matches that he wanted to wrestle in against the opponents of his choosing, and to really book his retirement rather than how it was Royal Rumble 2014 being his last match and then him walking out the next day. And obviously all the bitterness that followed for all the reasons people already know, and then the litigation and where we're at now. I think for him, I mean, maybe he's all right about it now. The fact that he's doing this StarCast is actually a really good sign that he doesn't hold as much, you know, I can understand him holding ill will towards WWE, but not pro wrestling as a whole. And for him to come back, maybe that would be like, you know, like we were talking about Tommy Dreamer, like a cathartic thing would be really good for him. So if he's going to come back, I hope he's doing it for the right reasons and for him and not really for anyone else. And I hope if he does come back that it all works out for him. But I mean, if he doesn't ever want to wrestle again, I absolutely respect that. You know, I think it's up to him and he needs to make that decision, and I'm sure he will.
So with that said, let's talk about some of the WWE stuff that's been on TV. Let's start with Extreme Rules, which took place this past Sunday in Philadelphia. Pretty big show, lots of title changes. We had The Undertaker in a tag team match that a lot of people were very happy about and ended up getting 4 stars and stuff. What did you make of Extreme Rules overall? And talk me through the big points that you'd like to discuss.
Yeah, I enjoyed the show. Kind of maybe there's a few sort of filler matches. I thought really these sort of B shows, they need to get them down to 3 hours 20. I mean, it just ran too long to me. But I mean, most of what was on the show was really good. I mean, on the pre-show, Finn Balor versus Shinsuke Nakamura, that felt like a pay-per-view match between them. Obviously, we know now that Balor's taking some time off, and Balor losing the IC title was sort of, you know, that was a surprise, him losing the belt. And then when the word leaked out that he was going to be leaving for a while, well, it all makes sense. So, I mean, you kind of hope for more from those two. But You know, they're not the wrestlers they once were. And hopefully Balor, after he comes back in a couple of months' time, he'll be, you know, re-energized and really wanting to contribute again. Not to say that in his current form he can't contribute, but, you know, I'm hoping when he comes back, he's going to be really bringing something different. He needs to turn heel. We've talked about this many times before. So I enjoyed that on the paper, on the kickoff show. On the main show, yeah, I enjoyed the tag team match between Shane McMahon, Drew McIntyre, and Roman Reigns and The Undertaker. No holds barred. You know, great sense of anticipation, tremendous reaction for The Undertaker. I thought Shane McMahon, this was could have been his best ever in-ring performance, Kenny.
Wow, that's high praise. Even better than his match with AJ at WrestleMania 33?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason I like this match was because Shane played the character that he should be playing. He looked worried. He was in constant retreat from The Undertaker. He was not coming in as this hard man who beats people up. He was this cowardly heel. That's the role he should be playing. And he did it really well here. Great night for The Undertaker. Most of what he did looked really good. You know that he wanted a good night here after the match with Goldberg. You know, and interestingly, that was brought up by Dolph Ziggler, wasn't it, on SmackDown?
Yes.
So, you know, the company has now decided, it's decided what everyone else has decided. And he's putting it out there in the public domain as well. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was very well done. Elias did the run-in, you know, he took Undertaker out with the fake guitar as he was preparing to last ride Shane through an announce table. All sorts of extracurricular activities and gimmicks and props and stunts. And, you know, Undertaker made a comeback, Chuck slammed Shane and Elias. Then Reigns, he wiped out Drew with a spear. Great timing on that. Wasn't it when Drew stood behind The Undertaker?
I would go so far as to say it's like an iconic shot.
Tremendous, tremendous camera work from WWE. I mean, they are just the best when it comes to this sort of thing. And he's there and you think, what's Drew going to do? And then Reigns wipes out Drew McIntyre. And didn't really matter that Undertaker actually almost sort of blew the tombstone because Shane didn't go up properly first time. Didn't matter at all. Kind of added to it, really. And then hit the tombstone, the second attempt for the pin. Tremendous open to the show. Fans were so into it. I mean, this was a great crowd there. It was very noticeable, wasn't it, that the fans were right up to the top of the building on the hard camera side, and they had all the lights on. You're like WWE celebrating the fact that they've got a big house. So I don't think it would be hard really to pick a better opening match in recent memory on a WWE show. Would you agree with that, Kenny?
Yeah, no, 100%. I had a friend of mine who is Undertaker obsessed, and he will, you know, defend The Undertaker at all counts, no matter what he does. And he had messaged me just saying, I've never been so relieved, you know, to see. And, you know, this just proved Undertaker should be in there with young guys. And
even though Shane's not young.
Well, no, like, have young guys who can wrestle around it, like Roman and Drew could. And then you have Undertaker can do stuff with Shane. Because if this was one-on-one with Undertaker and Shane, it would be nowhere near as good.
Absolutely so, right. I've got to say, Shane and Drew, I mean, Shane was really good. He was in position for almost everything. Absolutely spot on. If you watch it again, just watch Shane get into position for all of the Undertaker's moves. And he's like on time and on target. I mean, this was, to me, Shane's best ever in-ring performance.
What also worked about it was this was one of the rare occasions that WWE took a match and took the weaknesses of some people and just accentuated all the strengths of everybody and put it out there. And it was great. And Undertaker also has got himself a higher top on as well, which is good. You know, he's not getting any younger, Finn.
Well, exactly. You could do with one of them, Kenny.
Quite rude, quite nasty. So we did see a lot of title changes on the show. You know, you mentioned we had Nakamura winning the Intercontinental Championship on the kickoff show. We had Brock Lesnar cashing at the end to become Universal Champion. We had AJ Styles winning the US title. We had the New Day winning the SmackDown Tag Team titles.
That's right, yeah.
Were you a fan of all the title changes?
Probably. There were probably too many, but I mean, I don't really want to see Ricochet. I didn't want to see Ricochet lose the US title so soon, but I imagine this is going to lead to a rematch at SummerSlam. I'm hoping Ricochet is going to regain, because it just didn't feel like, you could say, well, AJ Styles has just turned heel. You know, he needed the win here, and the club needed the heat on them, and they needed this, you know, interference finish. And this really makes people more inclined to rally behind Ricochet and his chase type thing. But I don't know, I kind of felt like it was too soon for Ricochet to lose the belt. Hopefully they're going to stick with him. The tag team title, I mean, I'm not really sure where this Daniel Bryan thing's going, because, you know, he was supposed to make this career-altering announcement on SmackDown and then sort of teased it, but then stormed off and didn't. So if this leads somewhere, and it leads somewhere consequential, then I'm fine with that title change. If it doesn't, then you're like, why are you taking the belts off these guys at this point and putting them back on the New Day again? So, yeah, I'm not really keen on that, but let's give him a chance to make that one work. I think I would have rather... I mean, Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, I mean, the handicap match, it was all right. We're supposedly going to get a storyline with Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss with a split, so maybe they don't need the title. So maybe it was the right decision for Bayley to retain, but I don't know about that. I'll just tell you the other matches that I enjoyed on the show, Kenny. I thought Lashley versus Braun Strowman, Last Man Standing, was really good. I really like Braun Strowman selling here. He was, you might say, well, he's the monster, he shouldn't sell. But that really stirred up some emotion in this match. I felt that Braun kind of looked human. And we had this sort of big finish, and with Braun bursting through this wall after smashing Lashley off this ledge into all this padding. Fans were so into it. Announcers were stressing it was a different Lashley, which kind of made me think that maybe Lashley will get that shot at Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, which isn't happening, sadly. But I thought that was really well done. Cesaro versus Aleister Black, I felt, kind of went on a little bit too long. But it was a good match, and the right man won, Aleister Black. He's the guy who's on the rise, so that's good for him. What else was on the show? Kofi Kingston versus Samoa Joe. That was probably one of the weakest matches on the show, really, because it was just so hard to imagine that Samoa Joe was going to win.
Even though he got 95% of the offense to inevitably just get beat at the end.
Exactly. I mean, to me, that was another unmemorable defense by Kofi. But it looks like it's going to be Kofi versus Randy Orton, which is something that, in my last What's Going Down, I wrote about that and the potential of that feud. So it looks going to be Kofi versus Randy Orton at SummerSlam. So I am looking forward to that match. Kevin Owens versus Dolph Ziggler. That was a match that I think it's safe to say that you weren't eagerly anticipating, Kenny, and neither was I. But hallelujah, what a result. 17-second match.
It was like an early Christmas present.
It was an early Christmas present. So Owens pinned Ziggler after a Stone Cold Stunner. Then Owens blasted Shane on the microphone afterwards, so furthering that storyline. And actually thought the main event was pretty good as well. I thought that was well put together, and I thought everyone did a good job there. And I was watching, I was thinking, is this really going to... Because the show, to me, kind of ran long, as I said. But, I mean, I felt that they held the crowd's attention. And there was a kind of a tease earlier, wasn't there, from Heyman that Lesnar might be there? He'd made a comment earlier on the show about that.
Yeah, he did. Heyman obviously has been doing the whole thing about, you know, it's not a prediction, it's a spoiler. Is this me being honest, or is this me just being Paul Heyman? I thought they did a good job in sort of setting up the either way it would have worked. And I guess that kind of leads us into Raw as well, because what did you make of, we've talked before about if Brock gets the belt, who does he go up against? Is there going to be any fresh opponents? And now it's leading to him and Seth at SummerSlam. Do you have any positive notes for me on this? Can you give me any reassurances that I'm not watching the same old stuff? That'll be a no then from Finn Martin.
It's another win for Lesnar, isn't it? I mean, Rollins just didn't set the world on fire as champ. I mean, partly that was because of his opposition, Corbin, who's, you know, a decent mid-card heel, and actually did, I think he overachieved. He surpassed himself in the main event of Extreme Rules. I thought he did a good job there. But, I mean, he was never really somebody he's not somebody who's a genuine, credible threat to the Universal Champion. He just isn't. And he will never be. But in as we've talked about this many times before, haven't we, Kenny? Corbin is somebody who can be really effective if he knows his role, or if WWE knows his role and books him in the mid-card. That is somewhere where he can shine. And wrestling only, not wrestling all the time. I think he's a decent character, but he's not, to me, he's not a main eventer. He just isn't. So anyway, getting back to the question you asked, Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. No, I'm not really looking forward to this as a SummerSlam main event. I don't really see it as something that's really good enough or original. Well, it's obviously not original. We've seen it multiple times. I don't really want to see it headline the show. Hopefully something else will. I'm not excited about it all. Although I have to say, Kenny, that Battle Royal was very well received on the night. Tremendous Battle Royal and very well promoted as well.
The moment where Big E did the big ending to Braun Strowman, great. Just looked brilliant. So,
yeah, I mean, this was a definite Paul Heyman thing with a cross-branded top 10 all-star Battle Royal. He had all the guys in there that you know that he would have picked, all really talented performers who knew what they were doing. It was one of the hottest Battle Royals in WWE in a long time. I mean, Raw was actually a pretty hot show. The crowd were really into most of what was presented, with the notable exception of the women's match, of course. But most of what presented was a hit with the audience.
So let's run down just a couple of the other SummerSlam matches, obviously, is going to be, or SummerSlam matches, which we found out from Raw. We're going to have Becky versus Natalya. Where does Natalya rank for you out of the current women they have on the main roster as the choice? And did she do anything in the post-match promo to make you feel that this could be a good, a strong match at SummerSlam?
No, I have no interest in seeing this match. Becky Lynch looked bored to death at ringside. She came out, sat on a chair, and they had a little promo afterwards, which just felt so rehearsed. And he was just like, you know, with some extra Paul Heyman spice in it. But I'm not interested in watching Natalya challenge Becky Lynch. I mean, we've got Shayna Baszler and Io Shirai in NXT. Why aren't they on the main roster wrestling Becky Lynch? Why are they not here? Why are we having to watch Natalya again? She is not a pay-per-view. I mean, what's she done recently? She's done almost nothing of interest. I mean, this match was okay. You could say the match lasted too long, and it did. And they were hamstrung by this, let's stop the action when we go to a commercial break. So that doesn't have a detrimental effect on the crowd's patience for a match. But, I mean, fans rejected this match outright. I mean, they were chanting, let's go Cena, and Cena sucks during here at one point, which I've got to say was, you know, like a black comedy, really, listening to that.
Well, you know, I know Alexa Bliss had put a tweet out kind of saying, you know, disrespectful and stuff, and it's like, I get from the performer's point of view that, like, they're trying, and it's in a way, it's not really their fault that they are not where they need to be.
Yeah.
That's the fault of the company for putting them in a position where they're not able to deliver. You know, it's like if I was a musician, you know, I would be in front of 20 people in a bar somewhere. You're not going to put me out in the Hydro, open for Kings of Leon or something. Which is what they, you know, so whereas, like, you've got these women who, some of them are good, like, Nikki Cross is good. Natalya used to be good, but she's just so dull now that, like, I feel like her wrestling ability is masqueraded by just the fact that she's, a human cat now.
Yeah. I mean, but to me, I mean, when I think of Natalya's best ever match, I just think of the match with Charlotte that she had in NXT. Remember that match? And I can't think of anything she's had on the main roster, and she's been there long enough that's been half as good as that. So, I mean, at one point, she was obviously really good in the ring because she had that match with Charlotte. And at that point, Charlotte was nowhere near as far along the learning curve as she is now. So, I mean, she obviously does have talent, but she's been around forever. She's not a vibrant, interesting personality. It seems to me that she's been chosen because the show's taking place in Canada. Now, if it was taking place in Calgary,
Then you would get. I mean, it's in Toronto, so I guess it's in Canada. You know, she's a Canadian. You know, she's Canadian. I don't know what I was supposed to say after that. I just lost the will to sentence there.
Sorry, I was just distracted then by him. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm expecting a delivery, and I just thought somebody was at the door. So that was why I paused then.
I thought you were just doing a dramatic pause for Natalia.
Yeah. So, but Natalia, to me, the only reason she's been chosen for this match is because she's from Canada. And I think that's a bit of a crappy reason to choose her to challenge Becky Lynch in a title match at the number, what would it be, number three show of the year? Yeah, but I mean, as you say, who else is there on the main roster that is eligible or a credible challenger? I would have preferred to see Alexa Bliss as Becky Lynch's challenger, because that could have then furthered the Alexa Bliss versus Nikki Cross feud. And I'm not sure how that really fits into the overall scheme of things now that she's not challenging Becky Lynch. I mean, that they could, you can just imagine it. Alexa's like, oh, well, we lost to Bayley, but it doesn't matter. We're back in the title picture now. We've won this elimination match. You know, we're going to go out there. We're going to do it in Toronto, whatever. You know, we're going to make this happen, Nikki. And I think, and then they could have done, because Alexa's obviously really good on the mic. That's her strength. So she could have done some really good back and forth with Becky Lynch. Nikki could have been involved. And that storyline to me would have been a hell of a lot more interesting than Natalia versus Becky Lynch.
And then the other, I mean, let's, a more cheery thing to talk about from Raw is the return of Bray Wyatt. He came out as Finn Balor was celebrating having just defeated Samoa Joe. Balor's music's playing. The music then slowly veers off. The lights slowly go out. And when they come back on, well, they don't fully come back on, but when the lights come on enough, you see Bray Wyatt in that new sort of horror movie villain mask. He does the Sister Abigail to Finn Balor, and then he we just hear his laughing and he leaves. What did you make of his return? And he's apparently going to dispose of Finn Balor at SummerSlam, who's then going to take 2 months off. What did you make of the return?
Yeah, I mean, it was very well received. It was well handled, I felt, on the night. I didn't really understand the Samoa Joe versus Finn Balor match. I mean, Joe pinned Balor in, I think it was 1 minute and 23 seconds. And then Joe was then destroyed by Balor afterwards, thus negating the win that Joe had just scored. And then, as you say, Bray Wyatt made his first in-ring appearance on television under this new character, this new gimmick, and gave Finn Balor Sister Abigail. I mean, the character, it's going to be very interesting to see how this works out long-term. The fact that he's using the same finisher, do we read anything into that? Is he going to have the same in-ring act? Is he going to do basically the same moves? And if so, if it's all kind of say the same as it was prior to this revamp, then we're going to end up getting similar returns. So there is some concern there, Kenny. I feel like he needs to change his approach to matches. They need to be very different, because we need to know that this is not only a new character, but a new wrestler as well. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think he must be aware of that. You know, when you think about the amount of effort he's put into Firefly Funhouse, he's made, yeah. And all the kind of little in jokes and the mask and all that, he's put so much effort into this. I just don't think he's a guy who is going to then just do all that stuff and all that hard work to set up just the same. I think he's going to try to do something different. So that's the hope.
Yeah, I mean, you would think as well that Heyman knows that he's got something, you know, pretty hot here. He's got something here that could really erupt.
And it is going to be a bit, you know, if Balor is leaving for 2 months, Pro Wrestling Sheet had confirmed that he'd asked for 2 months off just to recharge. They've given him the time. If he gets to just kind of destroy Balor at SummerSlam, that's a big first guy to have destroyed. Because Balor, while Balor didn't get to beat Lesnar and stuff, Balor's still a fairly big part of the roster. You know, he doesn't just get jobbed out all the time. I know he lost here, but you know, it'd be a big win for Wyatt. So I'm looking forward to seeing that at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I am as well. I absolutely am. It's just, I mean, hopefully they've got a plan. I mean, they've had enough time to come up with one, so that this fulfills its potential. At first I was not convinced that this new Bray Wyatt was gonna be anything special. But now I am, and I'm just hoping that now he's in the arenas and he's a wrestler again, rather than a guy doing, you know, crazy inside joke laden segments. Now that he's actually a wrestler again, there needs to be a drive to try and retain that sort of aura that he's created for himself when he's in his matches. And I think that's going to be tricky to pull off.
And then on SmackDown, we had the town hall with Shane McMahon, you know, getting everyone to hear their grievances. And then we set up the SummerSlam matches with Bayley and Ember Moon for the SmackDown Women's title. Kevin Owens and Shane is being set up continuously, obviously, and Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton for the WWE title. What do you make of the creative on SmackDown for his leading into SummerSlam?
I don't know, some of it was all right. I thought Liv Morgan showed a little bit of fire there when she confronted Charlotte and like ridiculed her. And then we had a Charlotte-Liv Morgan match. And that really felt like it could have been something momentous for Liv Morgan. She lost far too easily to the figure eight. And upset, Morgan said she grabbed Corey Graves' headset afterwards and said that, you know, Charlotte was right. Morgan said, next time we see her, she's going to be real. So I'm hoping that leads to something. You know, I'm putting my faith in WWE on a lot of things right now, Kenny. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there that are just sort of, you know, allowing cynicism to take over and fearing the worst. And in the end, you know, they may end up being right. You know, their predictions may...
I don't think the SummerSlam card is particularly blockbuster, but I think that there is some good stuff to it. I think Ember Moon getting a title shot is going to be good because she is good in the ring. This will give her some time to shine. Orton is hopefully going to be hopefully be able to pull something good out of Kofi Kingston because it's gotten a little bit better, but it's still not been world champion material. So hopefully they can pull something out there. But I just want to mention a couple of things that I did not like on Raw and SmackDown. I did not like Cedric Alexander beating Drew McIntyre at all. Yes. Cedric Alexander is the most boring man of all time. I have no interest in watching him. He makes me want to tear my hair out. And if you say, oh, he's a good wrestler, great. Go watch him then. Don't send me into a coma. Thanks. And then on SmackDown, Andrade is jobbed out in 55 seconds to Apollo Crews.
Yeah.
Who has been on the main roster for 3 years and done absolutely nothing. And the difference there is that Apollo Crews, I've not really seen anything in Apollo Crews in the 3 years he's been up that's made me think this guy's a star at all. But Andrade, I've seen it quite a few times. So, you know, I feel Andrade and Drew were both far above this. And I'm hoping that with Heyman coming in and Bischoff, who, by the way, didn't start this week, he's starting next week now. I hope that if they're going to have some of this happen, at least build whoever it is first a little bit so that you don't just sit with a sour taste in your mouth. Because Drew McIntyre just came off this great thing at Extreme Rules with The Undertaker and Roman and Shane, and then he's out doing that on Monday. And I know Drew will kill him next week, and it probably won't matter, but I just thought it was really pointless.
Well, I would agree, yeah. I mean, another thing as well, Ricochet and the Usos battled the Revival and Bobby Roode in a best of three, and Ricochet pinned, I think it was Scott Dawson, in 23 seconds in the first fall, just so we could go to an ad break and come back.
23 seconds.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, 23 seconds. Yeah, that's
baffling,
what
isn't it?
And it's just like, why are these guys doing these jobs? I mean, it's because you're going to an ad break, change the format immediately. I mean, you know, Scott Dawson's won the Revival, the Raw Tag Team Champions, and he's doing a job that quickly. So, I mean, that would, to me, was just nuts. As you said, yeah, Drew McIntyre had coming off this really tremendous performance at Extreme Rules. I mean, he should have been the toast of the company. And he's doing the job the next day to Cedric Alexander. I mean, that was just outrageous. Street Profits were unbearable, Kenny. Unbearable. Excruciating. They made Natalya seem quite tolerable, and I didn't think anyone could make that possible, but congratulations, Street Profits, you achieved it. I mean, they just need to go. I don't know what the point of them appearing backstage and shouting really loudly is. Zack Ryder crushed Mike Kanellis, and then Maria buried Mike again. That match lasted 8 seconds, Kenny. Zack Ryder.
I will say, though, Sandra and I talked about it yesterday. If anybody gets the chance, Mike Kanellis did do a segment on 205 Live with Drake Maverick, which is great, where Kanellis pins a jobber and then he brings out Maverick and basically tried to goad him to fight him. and, you know, talks about how, you know, just basically puts all of his latent insecurities onto Drake Maverick, and then eventually Maverick attacks him, and it was quite a hot segment. So it's worth checking out. And then if people... Chad Gable did fight Jack Gallagher, and it was a good match, but anybody who's calling it match of the year needs help, because it is not. You know, there's, like, nobody in the crowd cares. The announcers are giving it a standing ovation. You're like, well, I know you're trying to get it over, but come on, it's not exactly Undertaker and Shawn Michaels or anything. So, yeah. But overall, I mean, there was a lot going on. How do you think the WWE are doing now that Extreme Rules has been out of the way and we're on the road to SummerSlam? Are you feeling that things have things taken a more positive direction in the last 3-4 weeks to make the TV more interesting? Do you think we're still at a trouble point? Where do you think we're sitting now?
I think the TV is definitely more interesting. There's more going on, and it feels like almost everything on each show does seem to have is been. You hope, this is the thing, is that a lot of it is unknowable because you don't know where it's going. So you can either be cynical and just fear the worst, or you can try and be, you know, an eternal optimist. Well, a optimist, not an eternal optimist, and try and give WWE a chance to actually succeed and get some of these people over. Like I mentioned about the Liv Morgan thing, with her cutting the promo afterwards, and she says, "When I come back, I'm going to be real." I mean, Liv Morgan to me is somebody who I think could be more than what she is. She's not that good, but I think she's somebody who would like to be better, and if she's willing to put the work in, then maybe she will be. I mean, obviously, as a Riot Squad, they were just that act had basically run its course. So whatever she does next is going to be more interesting than what she would have been doing had the Riot Squad still been together. So I want to believe that that's going to go somewhere for Liv Morgan, but it's sort of hard to do that in light of Drew McIntyre's sterling performance at Extreme Rules and then him losing to Cedric Alexander the next night. And as you said, next week he'll defeat Cedric Alexander. But how does that get Drew McIntyre over? It doesn't, does it? And what's more, the progress that has been made with Cedric, well, not really much progress has been made with Cedric because it was presented as a fluke. So it doesn't really matter. It's not like we're viewing Cedric now as a match for Drew McIntyre. Because he scored a fluke. So the whole thing gets neither man over. You know what I mean? It just doesn't. And we know what's coming next week, and then kind of the pieces will be reset. Only Drew's aura will be slightly diminished because he's just done this ridiculous job to this guy that no one really cares about and is all right. And he is technically a talented and, you know, very gifted performer, but it's hard for me to believe he's ever going to be a star because he lacks the charisma and all the intangibles. So there are a lot of things going on right now that have got the potential to be good, but whether or not they will be, that's another matter entirely. I mean, you know, we got Dolph Ziggler all over the TV, and I'm not really sure why he's there. What is the point of Dolph Ziggler at this stage? I am looking forward to the Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens match. I thought we had the main event there with Owens versus Dolph Ziggler. Shane and the other heel wrestlers were out. Owens had Dolph beat, and then Shane yanked Owens out of the ring. Owens dropped Shane with a stunner, and then he fled. So I think, has it been announced yet that it's going to be Shane versus Owens? I don't think it has.
It's not been announced yet, but I mean, all signs point to that's what we're getting. So
yes. So I mean, at least that there is something that I think is going to be really good for Owens. And he's somebody that right now you can see that there's a real drive to make him into a star, distinguish him, separate him from the pack, for sure. But there's also casualties, as you mentioned, Andrade. What the hell's he doing losing to Apollo Crews? I mean, right after that ridiculous superstar shakeup, I remember him scoring that victory over Finn Balor. You're like, wow, and it really felt like a milestone in his career. And then they moved Andrade back to, well, they moved him to Raw, didn't they? And then they moved him back to SmackDown. That's correct, isn't it, Kenny? I think I've got that right.
Yeah, I'm getting a headache thinking about it, but yes, I think that's right.
And then he ended up losing to Balor. It's like, oh, you know that good work you've just done? It's just been undone. And it's like, yeah, you look at Andrade, how can you really take him seriously as a future, you know, IC / US champion, which is the role he should be working towards, uninterrupted, in my opinion, when he's doing jobs to a guy like Apollo Crews, who is, you know, he's never going to be anything more than sort of a popcorn match guy, as far as I can work out. So there are definite signs. There are glimmers of hope there for sure. And I think overall the product is more interesting, but also there's still a lot of frustration.
Last thing I want to ask you in the main podcast before we go and record the overrun is, what do you make of the Raw reunion show that is going to be coming up next week? Let me just give you the list of participants for the Raw reunion. We have Candice Michelle, Alundra Blaze, Booker T, Christian, Devon, Dudley, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, X-Pac, and Road Dogg DX, Eric Bischoff, Gerald Briscoe, Hulk Hogan, The Hurricane, Jerry Lawler, Jimmy Hart, Kelly Kelly, Kevin Nash, Kurt Angle, Lillian Garcia, Mark Henry, Melina, Mick Foley, Pat Patterson, Ric Flair, Rikishi, Ron Simmons, Santino Marella, Scott Hall, Sergeant Slaughter, Psycho Sid, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, The Boogeyman, and The Godfather.
Wow, The Boogeyman.
First, of all the names, that's who sticks out to you.
Did you say Melina there?
Melina, yeah, she'll be back.
I think this could be the first time she's been back since she left.
I think it is, yeah. She's not been in any of the reunions at all, so...
Yeah, I mean, and I always felt she was like persona non grata in WWE. The fact that she's been recalled, I'm sure she's going to be on her best behavior, maybe angling for a contract. She's somebody who maybe could come back and do some stuff.
I think she turned 40 earlier on this year, but I don't think she looks it. And, you know, AJ Styles came in when he was 39. So, you know, she left in 2011. She had a match on the August 1st episode of Raw, and she was in a Battle Royal, and that'd be her final match because she was released later that week.
That's right, yeah, I remember she went because she was with John Hennigan at that time, wasn't she?
Yes.
So I remember she went before he did. I mean, you know, you just think about Raw 25 and the Steve Austin segment was pretty good, but I mean, that show was, let's face it, it was a washout, wasn't it? I mean, you were there.
I'm looking at the commemorative. Look, at the end of the day, it was great to be in the Manhattan Center, and I've got a commemorative chair and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, to me, the big thing they need to do in this show is, and I just want one, right? I just want one angle with a current guy getting to look better over the older guy.
Yeah.
Just one time.
Yeah. I mean, remember, was it the Raw 1000, July 2012?
Yes.
And they had Damian Sandow, who I believe was either Money in the Bank contract holder at the time.
No, this was before that. This was just when he was just, you know, the intellectual saviour to the masses.
Okay. Well, he did a segment, didn't he, with DX?
Yes, he did.
And they absolutely humiliated him. And it was just like, well, yeah, why not allow one of these younger guys to go over on one of these older guys? You know, why not put them over? You know, I mean, these are the guys you're relying on every week. So I think it's probably going to be a lot of silly backstage segments that don't really matter. Hopefully they'll do something meaningful with someone. I'm not really a huge fan of these shows because to me it should be about getting the new stars over, and they've got so much work to do with so many people.
Well, here's hoping with Heyman there that they can somehow push something through.
Yeah, I mean, the ratings winners, I mean, I understand why they're doing them, and the lapsed fans come back for the night, and you just hope that they're going to have a lot of stuff lined up with the current stars that maybe would pique the interest of the lapsed fans who are coming back for one night, and they'll think, you know, I'm sure that is the intention, but generally, that doesn't happen. And I often wonder why. And I think because they're under so much pressure to feature everyone and there's so much more talent to use that they sort of lose their focus and it just becomes this sort of blur of segments that don't really matter. So I'm hoping they've got something lined up. I mean, for instance, Steve Austin should do something with Kevin Owens. He needs to endorse Kevin Owens. There needs to be some type of passing of the torch for the Stunner, somewhat with Austin, Owens, and Shane McMahon. If they can do something there to really get Owens over and have Austin raising Owens' arm at the end and Shane McMahon sent packing and maybe Vince as well, then it's worth doing. If they do that, then I'll say, you know what? Everything else doesn't matter. It's been a success because you've got this guy, Kevin Owens, over Moore. He's a bigger star now than he was last week. So if they can do that, Kenny, I'll be a happy podcaster.
There you go. Well, we will be back next week and we will find out if they manage to do it. So Finn, I want to thank you. I think this has been a really strong episode. We've obviously talked a lot about the Colt Cabana stuff, the CM Punk stuff, Power Slam closing 5 years ago, and all the TV from this week. So if you like what you hear, head over to Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can get bonus content, you can get this 24 hours early, you can get the overrun, we talk about stuff we didn't get to, and look back at old Power Slams. We get to pick at the brain of Finn Martin and what's happened in the past, as well as articles, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, and so much more. Finn, where can people find you and go and read your very interesting article in The Dynamite Kid?
Yes, they can read that at finleymartin.co.uk. I have to say the website looks better on a computer and a tablet than it does on a phone. Sorry. But yeah, there's an interesting article there. So finleymartin.co.uk. And my Twitter is at Finlay Martin. And where can people find you, Kenny?
And you can find me at KennyMC985 at inside_the_ropes. You can get tickets to Brett the Hitman Hart coming to the UK and Ireland with us at insidetheropes.co.uk/hitman. And go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes when we are only 57 subscribers away from 99,000, which means we are very close to hitting 100,000, which would be huge for us. So please go subscribe if you don't already. Story up today with Edge talking about nostalgia acts and their place in wrestling. A couple of days ago, we had a story up with Chris Jericho talking about his feud with Jon Moxley with Mitch the Potted Plant. Last week, we have a story with Wade Barrett talking about when he was in a gym. And Brock Lesnar, it's a funny gym story involving Brock Lesnar. I'm not gonna ruin the punchline. Anyway, Finn, I hope you enjoy your weekend, whatever DIY experiment you've got on this time.
I'm actually going to a beer festival on Saturday, so no DIY, just quite a lot of drinking.
Excellent. Well, we will look forward to your recommendations next week. Thanks very much for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. If I'm sad tonight.